Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. Today will be an episode because it's Father's Day.
Dun, 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 dun. Just yucking it up.
And we have two actual fathers in the room.
Sounds like you're going to pick on us.
No more phone problems. No more, oh, we can't get him on Skype. We can hear him, but he can't be connected. We don't have that. None of that. So that being said, my name's Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Our guest today is
Kenneth Ryan.
Good old Ken Ryan, huh? Guess who he's related to? Bill. So obviously, yeah, right. Obviously Bill's dad. So you can find everything about the program on wethepeopleradio.us. The archive of the program will go up this afternoon, so you'll have a commercial-free version. And coming up on October, you have 10 years of archives to look back on. So I hope you caught the show last week with Dr. Charles Asher Small about anti-Semitism. It was amazing. He did a great job. And for any of you who have dad stories you'd like to share, I don't know if that's a good way to promote it.
Might as well.
That's probably a bad way to say it.
Yeah, give us a call. Give us a funny story.
Everybody's got dad shows. We don't always put out for like, oh, call us, because we don't typically do call. But, yeah, you can call us. That's the phone number. 530-605-4567.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Ashley didn't have any kind of a seizure, so I must have gotten it correct. Yep. I was waiting for the look.
605-4567.
605-4567. So, yep, you're free to call up, and you'll get connected with Ashley, and you can chat with us, because I know this is always bad to hear, but we have no plan for today. There's no plan.
There's a plan.
Plans are stupid.
But you have great music, so you'll be fine.
But we do have great music. I know. Did you see my songs?
Looks great.
The song list is quite good. But, yeah, the plan is... plan's a dud. You know, what are you going to say? But just the fact that we've got two middle-aged... Are you still considered middle-aged?
Middle-aged, at least,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, so full disclosure, I'm 57. Bill's...
45.
Bill's 62.
55. 63. 63.
Yeah, I already said I'm 57. You're definitely older than I am. And...
wonderful.
Dad's waxed over 80. Not that far, though. And so just to kind of give you an idea of, you know, what time period we're talking about, what sort of generation we're in, because obviously, like, okay, let's see, everyone here drank out of a hose when they were kids.
Correct.
Yeah, we all rode without seatbelts.
Right.
As we made that so painfully clear. We unfortunately told some stories earlier today, and that always wrecks everything, you know, sort of.
Well, some of them were not suitable for airing, but yeah, we
yeah, that's true. There, yeah, some we couldn't share, but yeah, they did involve some seatbelts and lack thereof. So
the rear of trucks, etc.
Oh yeah. Bill spent some time getting hauled around in the back of a truck with his brothers.
Yeah,
sister got to ride inside.
That was standard mode of transportation back in the day. All right, kids, get in a truck. You jumped in the back like a dog, and he took off. Hope it didn't roll over.
Rain in the rain.
Oh yeah, if it rained. You just pulled a blanket over your head and ran for cover when the truck stopped.
Could you imagine if you told kids today, get in the back of the truck, pull a blanket over your head, we're driving to Mexico, kids? Did you guys drive all the way to Mexico like that?
No, I think the furthest trip we ever took in the back of the truck was Washington State.
It was quite a way.
It was several stops in between. You know, we'd hit the campgrounds and all the points of interest, and then we'd jump back in the truck, pack it. We had a little, like, right next to the back of the cab, we set up like a bed, and we just had a cushion and blankets and pillows. And we'd, if you hit something, you want to have a little cushion there. So we had pillows, which are standard safety issue then. And,
sure.
Yeah.
Then who needs seatbelts when you've got pillows?
No, you got pillows. Yeah.
It was like something, early, what do you call it, airbags.
Yeah, if something was going to happen, it's grab the pillows, kids.
And ours, okay, so when do you remember when we wore seatbelts?
Oh, yeah.
Here's the quiz question. When did we wear seatbelts? How about that? There were limited occasions that we wore seatbelts, very limited.
Yeah, but you're in the back of the truck.
No, in the van.
Yeah.
But when did we wear the seatbelts?
I can't remember when.
It was dark. It had to be dark. There were a set of conditions that all had to fall into place. It had to be dark, and it had to be raining.
Oh, then
it was dark and raining. You wore the seatbelts.
That was all the time.
No dark,
yeah.
No rain.
Yep.
Obviously, there were not going to be any accidents, right. And there was going to be no need for that.
Nope. Just hang your head out and enjoy the ride.
Yeah. So we
the early years, you didn't wear any seatbelts. Trust me.
Were there even any?
There weren't even.
Oh, we had cars that didn't even have.
I was going to say I don't think we had any, but I remember in the van we did. But it was a big deal if it was dark and it was raining. You had to wear the seatbelt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing ever happened. But
I think we had some cars where they were purposely tucked in behind the seat because they got in the way.
And, yeah. and we should point out Bill's father was a highway patrolman.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's true.
Obviously, back in the day, mm-hmm. when you were a highway patrolman, it wasn't...
No, it was much different back in the day than it
is
today.
Much different.
Much different, yeah. You did more than just traffic stops and traffic control and, you know.
Like what? What are some of the things your dad did? And if you don't say it, I will, so you might as well just confess right now.
Well, the one story that comes to mind is in his early days as a patrol officer, he was patrolling out of Los Angeles and up in the hills. And, you know, it was a little bit less domesticated back then. And him and his partner were driving around and a bobcat ran across the road. And his partner says, "Kind of, you ought to shoot that bobcat, make a great skin rug." And he goes, "Better not." And he goes, "You probably couldn't hit it anyway." Well, that's all he had to hear. So they pulled over and one guy grabbed the flashlight, he pulled out his service revolver, and they looked over the edge, and there that bobcat was standing there looking at him. That was a bad mistake because he was a crack shot. He dropped that bobcat. So they went down the hill, grabbed it, threw it in the trunk. Well, about that time, they got a call on a traffic accident down a freeway. So they jammed down to get to the site, and back then they let civilians help direct traffic. If you pulled over, they'd let you, you know, put flares out.
While they were doing their work.
While they were doing their work, you know, that you could help. Well, a guy runs up to him and says, "Officer, is there anything I can do to help?" He goes, "Yeah." He tosses him the keys and says, "Go over to my car, grab some flares out of the trunk and start laying a flare line." Right on. So he goes back and he opens the trunk. Well, this bobcat wasn't dead. And he opened the trunk, and here's this wild bobcat with its claws up snarling at the guy. Scared the heck out of me, he slams the trunk down, runs back to my dad and says, Officer, there's a wild beast in your trunk. And, of course, my dad all of a sudden realized, uh-oh. So he says, "Go see Officer Jones over there, get in his trunk, and we'll take care of that later." And it just blew the whole thing off. Well, shortly after that, he had to leave the scene and get that thing out of his trunk, which it passed away at that point. Yeah. But, yeah, that was a bad deal.
The old dead bobcat in the trunk.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I don't know if they do those sorts of things on the patrol today, but they did back then. It was a little bit
That's
Wild
funny.
West.
I guess we both have wild animal stories. Do we have time? Oh, yeah, we have time for your wild animal story because I posted the picture.
Of
the tiger.
The tiger, the famous
take
tiger.
Bill, take Bill's mountain lion and we'll raise you a tiger.
Yeah, you're going to trump me with a tiger story.
Well, this is the story about can you do it? Eye of the Tiger was out with... Of course.
Sylvester Stallone, Rocky.
Correct,
yeah.
Correct. And I was supposed to make a national presentation down in San Diego. And I decided that I'd make an Eye of the Tiger speech. And I said, Wendy said, "Why don't you have a tiger help you?" And I said, "How are you going to do that?" He said, "We can rent one out here in Burbank."
Rent a tiger.
I
said, "Rent a tiger?" He said, "Oh, yeah, no problem." So I went to my boss, the chairman, and said, "Do you think I can rent this tiger to kind of appear with me?" He said, "Yeah." Well, several of the other officers of the corporation heard about it and said, "Absolutely not. This is terrible. You know, it could eat up the audience, you know, et cetera."
And these are insurance guys.
Yeah.
So somewhat risk adverse, right?
Trust me. So all of a sudden they said, "Here's what we'll do. If you go in the cage with the cat and be photographed that it doesn't eat you up, you can take it to San Diego to the speech." So guess where I went?
You went down
Burbank, California, into the cage with the animal actress, and she didn't eat me up. So down to San Diego we went.
So hence the picture, and that picture's on the site if you want to see that.
And Colleen was there. One of the daughters was at the audience.
My sister Colleen. So when you walked in with the tiger, though, right?
No. I was in halfway through the speech. I raised my right arm, and the warehouse door, the doors to bring objects up from the showroom into the auditorium opened, and out walked the cat with her handler, not on a leash, just walking alongside.
Oh, wow.
The audience said, "It's a cat. It's a tiger." The one guy said, "It's a cat." The other guy said, "Bullshit, it's a tiger." The audience went absolutely ape.
We don't get to say the S word.
Yeah, I know.
We get to say crap, though. We checked that out.
Trust me, they all did that.
Yeah.
And so the tiger comes across the platform, jumps up on the platform with me, and I get to pet the cat. But you couldn't pet her on the rear. You had to pet her on the front shoulders.
The scary part. Yeah,
that's right.
The scary part.
That's right.
Not the safe part.
Petting it on the rear put it into attack mode.
Anyway, that was quite a speech. And it went off well.
Nice.
Yeah, it's quite a picture. I was going to ask you about that.
So insurance isn't always boring.
No.
Yeah.
All right. We've got to take a little quick break. And in honor of that story, Ash has got a little tune for us. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Little vacation there.
You don't see all the movement in here.
It's like, you know, maybe I'll never forget it when I first saw that movie, except for the dead ant on the top of the station wagon, except for that part. And the pot smoking. We didn't do that either. But the rest of it, totally true. Totally true.
A couple of misdirections once in a while. But
it was the shorts at the rodeo.
Right.
You were totally Chevy Chase.
I know.
They had literally spied on our family, and somebody capitalized on that, made an entire movie about it.
So what about the shorts at the rodeo?
Oh, yeah. Was that the first rodeo I ever went
to? We were Gillette.
Because we didn't.
Gillette, Wyoming.
Gillette, Wyoming.
That were shorts.
They were
yellow.
Rodeo.
I remember them being yellow. Was I just damaged?
They were yellow.
They were yellow.
They were not yellow.
He was wearing sandals with socks, though.
Were they dark socks,
yes.
though?
Oh, yes.
They were dark socks.
Dark socks. But that's cool again now. If you're under 30 now, you think he's cool. But no, this was not cool back then. Not cool.
We walked in the stadium. The whole stadium stopped. Even the Bronco horse stopped to watch
Everybody
me
stared.
Walk.
It was like, oh, this isn't good.
Yeah.
I was a kid. And, we thought we were all cool.
And again, that goes back to vacation when Chevy Chase goes to the bar and says, come on, Rusty, I'll show you how to drink.
I know.
Sean wanted to crawl back in the truck.
Well, we didn't know, you know.
Yeah.
We didn't know, but I guess we thought you knew. Yeah. Like, hey, wait a minute, there's some cracks in the armor. This guy doesn't actually know what he's doing. He was way out of his depth. But, you know, I did not figure this out. There were many things I didn't figure out, obviously, like most kids. But I think I was like late 20s, and people, you know, I'd tell them about these road trips we did, and just to give people some perspective, we had 5 kids in 7 years. So it was a pile of kids that were all roughly the same age. And we were little, and so we're crammed in this.
It was a big van.
Yeah, it was like a Ford Club van.
Right.
It wasn't the kind, if you have a group home, though, you have a bigger vans now. Yeah. Not a group home van.
In other words, it wasn't seating for everybody, but almost.
Not really.
Yeah, there was.
Then we had 7 big sleeping bags. We had a giant canvas tent. We had
ground cover.
Spikes, we had all
hammers.
The food. Everybody had anybody who's ever watched that old movie, What's Up, Doc, with Barbara Streisand and Ryan O'Neal. We had the plaid bags. We had the exact same bags. They're kind of like glorified golf or bowling bags.
Right.
Kind of shaped like bowling bags. So everybody had their little bowling bag with their clothes in it for like the 2 weeks or whatever. And so we're packed in there like cordwood. And these other guys would pull into these campgrounds, and they had like these campers, you know, even the kind that popped up, you know, and stuff like that. We were like, hey, how come we can't have one of those? That'd be kind of neat. You know, maybe we could put some of the stuff like on the top, like on a rack. We could use a rack. And what was the answer? You remember the answer?
Uh-uh.
Yeah, the answer was, I don't want to look like a tourist. I don't want to look like a tourist. And so when we were kids, it was like, yeah, okay. I mean, I could kind of get that, right?
Yeah,
you don't want to look like...
Well, for the eye.
I'm almost 30 years old, and I'm realizing we had Connecticut plates on the car.
Yeah, in Wyoming.
Like, that was sort of a giveaway.
wait, for the audience's purpose.
He's going to defend himself. It is Father's Day. Go ahead.
You got to remember this, that everybody in the car had an assignment. Molly had the ground cover. Someone had the spikes. Someone had the corners. And then when they said lift, they lifted. In order to do it properly, when we left Connecticut, we practiced for three nights in the front yard.
Wow, this is like regimen.
We were at a campground in the island in Iowa, some island campground. We pull in, the kids go through their routine, the tent comes up, and I said the rule was, when I have a beer in my hand, you can go play.
Like if they had some kind of a pool, which
right, you could
they
go
never did.
Jump around. Anyway.
In our dreams, they did.
So this guy is at one of those fancy, real fancy rigs parked next to us in the next slot. He gets up out of his chair, walks over, an elderly guy. He says, I see you got a beer. And he said, you want a scotch? And I said, well, yeah, but I don't have any. He said, well, I want you to come over. He said, I'm a retired 2-star general from the United States Army. He said, I have never in my life seen a uniform drill performed like this but in the campground. And he says, I salute you, young man.
The only thing you didn't have was a whistle. All right.
I was a little kid, and I still remember it was like, this is like my dad's proudest moment.
It was. It really was.
I mean, it was like, dun, dun, dun.
That's my troop right
that
there.
That was a great day. He's like, yep, those are my kids.
We were in Tennessee, and then we drove in with the blue license plate. That wasn't too good a sign.
Oh, no.
The blue Connecticut license plate.
You didn't look like a tourist.
No, we didn't.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we had a lot of those. Remember
the snakes in Montana, we had to zip up the tent and sleep all night. And we realized that we camped in the slot they gave us. But we failed to realize where it was. At about 2 o'clock in the morning, the ground starts to shake. And lo and behold, it lights up. There's a light flashing across. There's a Great Northern train headed for Seattle. We're on the right-of-way of the railroad, Great Northern Railroad, right next to us.
Oh, yeah.
It's on the berm right next to us. And this freight train, we knew we couldn't run out of the tent. We didn't know where the train was. We'd rode right into the tracks. So, anyway, it was quite a night.
Yeah, we had the zipper so that the snakes didn't come in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was all that. Underwear was the tool for everything. So, you know, you had seven people in a tent. What do you have the most of? Underwear.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, the reason we knew about the snakes is the kids walked by our place holding two big rattlers in their hands saying, be cautious.
Yeah.
You know, they were joking with, they were locals.
Yeah.
That's like the place we went to in Mexico. We were down there on one of our various trips, and my dad pulls into this campground, beautiful place, right on the bay. I mean, it was really nice, and we're thinking, man, we're going to go fishing and swimming in the ocean. And so we pull in, and the guy takes
best
his money.
Plans.
Yeah, the guy takes his money and says, now, it's pretty good fishing out there. He goes, good swimming, but don't swim after dark. Well, what's after dark? They said, oh, well, the sharks come in and eat anything that's in the water. So, okay, well, we're going to probably go somewhere else. Yeah, that's how that bay got cleaned out, is the sharks came in every night and cleaned everything out.
So it was super clean.
Oh, it was clean.
Not a bunch of other little kids swimming around.
No night swimming there.
That was an eye-opener.
Snacked up.
I mean, here a kid from the country, I've never seen a shark, and it's like, I know they bite. I'm not getting in the water. Even during the day, I'm not getting in the water.
I get to tell one on Aaron because one night we're in New Mexico, camped above Albuquerque on the hillside.
My favorite story.
And as we pull into the campgrounds, we hadn't eaten much that day. So we said, well, go back to the country store and get some hamburgers, et cetera. So they were out of
they had pizza.
They were out of hamburgers. All we got was pizza.
We had died and gone to heaven. They had one pizza.
Big pizza left.
Oh, yeah.
So we come out, and we're now sunset. It's now sunset. The golden, beautiful sky is now setting behind Albuquerque as we overlook the beautiful city.
Uh-huh.
And then one of the campers next door walks over, and Aaron says, he's a vampire.
No, he was a werewolf.
Oh, werewolf. That's
do you remember his name?
Yeah, no.
Jerry.
Jerry the werewolf.
Jerry the werewolf.
We invite Jerry to our dinner table with our limited pizza.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Come on over,
Jerry. We're all...
You got one pizza, five kids.
No, Jerry. Get out, Jerry.
You don't have enough pizza.
But the point is, the sun goes down, the hair on his arm starts to grow. Aaron Story was a werewolf.
He was the hairiest man I ever saw in my entire life.
She stayed awake all night making sure that we were safe from Jerry the werewolf.
But don't you remember when I took, I was taking Sean and Colleen maybe with me, and we went over to get the pizza, and the whole way over, I'm like, did you guys see the hair on his arms? I swear that guy's a werewolf. And so by the time we got back to the thing, we were all convinced he was a werewolf, right? And what's he start talking about? I love to be out at night.
Oh.
I love to go talk to the young people that are out at night. And we were like, what?
These eyeballs were about...
Every single thing he said was like, yep. Werewolves do that.
He's a werewolf.
No, he was totally a werewolf. I can't even hear the name Jerry without...
getting crawlies.
Or Albuquerque. I hear Albuquerque. I'm like, oh, don't go there.
Oh,
nothing good happens in Albuquerque. It's where Jerry the werewolf lives.
Werewolves.
I wonder if Jerry knows what an indelible mark he left on our family.
He left a mark on you, I could tell you.
Yeah, because he had hair. He was the hairiest guy I'd ever seen in my entire life.
And he came in with the sun behind him. The sun set
behind
him.
And he was a weirdo. Wait, he was a weirdo.
Come on.
All day.
He was a nice camper
all
next door.
Day.
Yeah, he ate too much pizza, though.
He was a taxidermist.
One pizza.
She'll never forgive him on the pizza count.
It was a small pizza. There were seven of us, and he was going to eat. He was like, oh, I think I'll have another piece. And then, of course, what do you say about that, right? Were you raised by wolves? Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
As a matter of fact... Oh, man. Jerry the werewolf.
That was a trip, I'm telling you. Kevin bought the Longhorns in Texas and then forgot they were there and sat on them. And he's back there screaming, I'm sitting on my Longhorns.
There's a lot that went on in that van. There's a lot. A lot of things happened in there. It was not good.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a lovely song getting ready to be queued up for you. We shouldn't walk away from Jerry too quickly. But there are people like that, you know, on these little travel things that show up. That guy, man, I'll never forget that.
Oh, yeah, I can't tell you how many times we've been camping and
sitting
people would come walking
and...
by, and it's like, ooh, that guy looks scary.
Yeah.
You know?
What's up with that?
Yeah, I think he lives here.
But we never got, like, store food. That was a big deal. Jerry ruined it.
Yeah. Biggest deal we ever had when we were on a camping trip, we got rained out. Everything was soaking wet, so we had to go to the... laundromat and put everything in the dryers, and we got to go to the movies while it was drying.
Oh, I'll tell you what we did on our trip that got rained out. When we come back, we have to take a quick little break. My dad's going to take his medication. When we come back, we'll tell you what happened in the trip that got rained out in Nova Scotia. It's bad to have your oldest kid remember this stuff. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People.
Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf could want.
Listen to me,
Little Red Riding Hood. I don't think.
The nest shot of bedtime later that night. Turning on my son Scooby-Doo nightlight. He crawled out of bed and he got down on his knees. He closed his little eyes, folded his little hands, spoke to God like he was talking to a friend. And I said, son, now where'd you learn to pray like that? He said, I've been watching you, Dad, ain't that cool? I'm your buckaroo, I wanna be like you and eat all my food and grow as tall as you are.
It's totally true.
It is true.
Actually, it's kind of interesting. The stanza I didn't choose involved the S word.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Whoa.
And I should have used that one because, you know, as we started the show.
Yeah, we had
a little slippage there. Yeah, kind of funny. But you do watch your parents. Okay. I mean, that's how you learn everything.
Big deal.
That's where you pick up the work ethic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, exactly.
And everything can be done. There's no such a thing as impossible.
Right. Yeah. You learn all that stuff.
You just solve the problem.
Yeah. I think of all the things my dad taught us as kids. I mean, every time we moved, he had this thing. We moved a lot. I think I counted 16 different homes we lived in while he was on the force. We moved a lot.
And they had four kids.
Yeah.
And one of the things he loved was having property with a three-rail fence. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, a three-rail fence requires a lot of fence posts.
And a lot of painting.
Yeah.
Well, it was just split rail?
Well, it wasn't split rail. It was like big 6x6 or railroad
okay,
ties.
Okay, you weren't at Tom Sawyer painting the fence, though.
Well, we did that, too.
That was way later.
Yeah, that was after, after we dug built the holes. Fence. But it was like digging the holes, tamping them down, getting the posts in, pounding on the boards. So, yeah, you learned work, and you learned how to build fence. You know,
you learned you had to finish.
You had to finish. Yeah, mm-hmm. He had a rule as kids. When you got up in this is during the summertime, when you got up in the morning before you did anything, if you wanted to go fishing or do whatever you wanted to do, you could do it. But he wanted 3 posts put in every day. Mm-hmm. Well, geez, in the course of a week, you had a pretty good stretch of fence ready to go up, you know. But, yeah, he taught us work ethic. You didn't even question it either. It's like in the morning, it's like, what are we going to do after we put the posts in?
Yeah.
And then we went out and did it.
Well, the story of Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer is a real story because as a young kid growing up, there was Carrie and myself. And one of the obligations we had is to weed the garden.
Oh, I hated that.
And weeding meant that you didn't step on the plants that were producing. You had to be careful. So we had, like Tom Sawyer, got all our football buddies, all our neighbor kids to come over. And, of course, they trampled.
I was going
to
say, how'd that work out?
Well,
that
they trampled. Like they didn't know the ethic. They didn't know the weeding
they got the
weeding
out,
with
but
some
they
precision.
Stomped on everything.
We caught hell that night because all our plants were trampled.
It's like, funny, but the weeds are all pulled.
My folks always had a garden. My dad loved gardening, and we had to go out and pull weeds. And that was the one thing I just hated. And I told myself, when I grow up, I'm never having a vegetable garden. And you know what? As soon as I was on my own and had my own place, it's like, I'm going to put in a vegetable garden.
The roads were wider.
Oh, yeah. Now it's like, what's a few weeds, you know? Yeah.
It's like a sickness you get infected with. You get used to it.
Oh.
Yeah. Because you want to, you know, I mean, you always want to do for your kids what your parents did for you. It's usually to your kids, but it's kind of funny.
And dad's always taught us to take a chance. There was always something that, you know, if you had that urge to do, do it. You know, kind of calculate whether it's right or wrong, but do it, you know.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you about taking a chance. We had horses growing up, and we had this one horse. His name was Bally, and he was a great big horse. And we used to go out in the field and, you know, lead him over to the fence, climb up on the fence and jump on his back without a saddle or bridle or anything and just ride him around the field with, you know, he was a good horse. He would let you do it. Well, my brother was out doing a little trick ride and riding backwards and getting on his knees. And my dad was out moving sprinkler pipe in that same field. And he tells Kurt, he says, well, see if you can ride him standing up. And I'm standing there. It's like, I think back on it, it's like he could have broke his neck, you know?
Easy.
So, you know, being the daredevil he is, he gets all situated and he gets on his back and he starts trotting along and he gets up and he's standing up on the back of this horse as he's riding around.
Bareback. Yep.
So what's my dad do? He spins the rain bird around, squirts the horse on the butt.
Oh.
That was the end of the ride. He did go down.
Yeah,
it was kind of a cold shot, but he thought it was funny as heck. Yeah.
And there's also the quiet moment.
Good old dad.
My dad was a quiet man. And one day in the Bay of Olympia, they had log rafts. And, of course, the loggers would walk on the rafts, but they had cleats on the bottom of their boots so they didn't slide in between. We had tennis shoes or regular shoes. So we're bouncing around on these rafts, and the bridge that connected the downtown to our side of the city, my dad stopped the car, walked over to the rail, and we're out there in this log raft. If we'd fallen between the logs, dead. They close and you're gone.
Yeah, you're dead.
He said, very quiet voice, get home. I could hear that voice, that quiet voice. It was like a boom from God. I thought God talked to me. And it was like all the way across the raft, and we got our butts home. Trust me.
Uh-huh.
You know. And then we learned how stupid we really were.
Well, yeah, but that was like the rite of passage, you know. When you weren't supposed to do something, nobody was looking. That must be fun. They don't want us to do it.
They don't want us to do it.
Well, so we had gullies near our house, and there were alder trees. Alder trees are relatively small and easy to
cut. And Uncle Carrie was the younger brother.
So we would climb the tree, and then the other brother and neighbor kids would cut the tree down, and he'd have to ride it down.
No.
But we would cut the tree so it rode to the hillside on the upside.
Yeah.
We cut Carrie's tree so it fell to the deep gully.
Yikes.
So Carrie had this, down at into the gulf. Wonders we didn't kill him. I mean, he's still alive today, but I think it's over the
stupid. That's why he became a Marine.
Yeah, that's right.
That's why he did so well in the Marines.
No, it was Air Force, Honor Guard.
Oh, it was Air Force. Okay. Yeah. It's like, oh, this will be easy.
But you could hear his voice today.
Training camp. It's going to be really hard. He's like, no, not going to be that hard.
We had a place down along the Sacramento River at one point in time, and we had a horse, and so myself and some of our neighbor buddies, we were going to go on a horseback ride. Well, one of the rules was, now we were, I'm going to say, seventh grade, and we were just little kids, stay out of the river. Because that river's swift and it's dangerous. Yeah. Well, we get down on this trail and we're down along the river where there was an island out. Oh, it was maybe 50 yards offshore. And, of course, I convinced everybody, let's swim the horses across to the island. We'll have our own island over there. And then one kid was kind of afraid. He's like, I don't think we should go in the river. Like, it'll be fine. Just do like they do in the movies. You just slide off the saddle, hang on the saddle horn, and when you get across, just swing your leg back over, and you're there. So we did. Long story short, he lost his horse. He lost his shoes. I mean, it was pretty
lost
swift.
The horse?
Well, yeah, he fell off.
Oh,
tried to slide off and lost his grip, and now he's floating down the river. And the current was so swift, it peeled his shoes off. Well, so I get across. I catch his horse. I come back. He's got no shoes. He's like, what am I going to tell my mom? I don't have any shoes. Tell him you took them off and you lost them. another lesson learned. You know, there was a reason they told us to stay out of the river. Yeah, it was funny.
Oh. Ashley has a fun song for you for that.
Across the river.
We play that song a lot in our immigration shows, but you know what? It's got yet another view.
Another meaning right there. Oh, as kids, it was always kind of a challenge to go off on your own and do the things that you thought were a good idea, you know?
Because we were smarter than our parents.
Yeah, ignore the good advice.
Because
you're on your own.
It's never good advice until way later.
I was in seventh grade. I was
way
smart
later.
Enough.
Yeah.
But, you know, then you understand. It's like, oh, yeah, they actually did know what they were talking about. But you also kind of learn how to deal with crisis. I was thinking about the rainstorm. You thought you were going to get out of that, but you're not. And we went to Nova Scotia, and it rained for, I don't know, 2 weeks?
Well, it's a hurricane. We were in the edge of a hurricane.
Oh, it was a hurricane. Oh, that's why it rained for 2 weeks. I just remember it just never stopped raining.
We left from Maine. We crossed from Maine into the
great camping weather.
It's kind of funny. I'm 57 years old. I just found out it was a hurricane.
It'll be all right, kids.
Everybody should do a show with their dad.
We looked at camp that evening. It was still raining. Everybody in the tent. All of a sudden, the tent began to shudder and shake.
I remember that part.
Blew it down.
It did.
Oh, it blew it down, flat down. So we all got in the truck or back into the van and headed back home towards home. And, of course, the story ends with me walking into Sears and
But it was
Roebuck.
Soaking, and we had to camp a couple other places. We didn't go straight home.
No.
We did not go straight home because I do remember we were like, Dad, can't we just go home? Can't we just go home? And he had the lips that don't move, you know, when dads do the talking with the lips are just super,
super tight. Sit down and
be
quiet.
He said, we are going to have fun. We are on vacation. We are going to have so much fun. You're going to have plastic surgery to remove the smiles from your faces. And I'm not kidding you. When I heard that line in that vacation movie, I'm like,
hey, wait a minute.
Wow, this surveillance thing isn't new at all. They were following us even way back then. But we were not going home because, you know what? We weren't weaklings. He turned around and the classic line, don't be a bunch of weak sisters. It's just water.
Just a little wet.
Don't be weak sisters. Yeah. But when we got back to town, the tent had leaked. And it was a big canvas tent. It
really was.
It kind of weighed 9,000 pounds when it was wet. But good times.
It was a Sears and Roebuck product.
But I still have this vision of Ken walking through the Sears store, dragging a soaking wet tent.
Eight-man canvas tent. Unfurled.
Yep.
It left like a river through Sears.
We hosed it down just to make sure it was wet before we left. We got in the truck. It's soaking wet. We walk through there. The people, of course, in the parking lot see me dragging this green thing through the parking lot. Like, what the hell's wrong with that
All
guy?
These kids in a giant wet tent.
So I go through the door, and, of course, where's the sporting goods? Down in the basement. So it means you got to go. You're in the
all
upper level, all the way down the escalator, over to the
dragging
sports store.
A wet tent.
There's a trail of water behind us. Anyway, they gave me a new tent.
They didn't want to give you a new tent before, but you helped them. You helped them see it.
I just see them.
See, that was
it was a visual.
It was a little consumer lesson that we got.
Yeah.
It leaked.
Yeah.
It leaked. It had
hurricane.
It was bad.
Yeah. It was only a hurricane. What's this tent's problem?
I know, because it's break time.
Oh.
You know, capitalism is really
gets in the way sometimes.
It's awesome, but I'll tell you what, it gets in our road every 15 minutes.
I know it.
So it's kind of a problem.
All right, so we'll pay the bills.
But all righty, we'll celebrate capitalism for 2 minutes. You are listening to We the People. It is Father's Day, which is why we're telling all the dad stories that we can think of. And, there's so many more. Be right back.
Wagon with a tent, a Coleman, and sleeping bags. Some fishing poles, a cooler of Cokes. 3 days before we had to be back. When you're seven, you're in seventh heaven. When you're going camping in the wild outdoors. As we turned off on that old dirt road, he looked at me and swore, Dad, this could be the best day of my life. I've been dreaming day and night about the fun we'll have. Just me and you, doing what I've always wanted to. I'm the luckiest boy alive. This is the best day of my life.
Supersonic man out of you. Stop me now.
I'm having such a good time. I'm having a ball.
Don't stop me now.
If you want to have a good time, just give me a call.
Don't stop me now.
I'm having a good time.
Don't stop me
now. Yes, I'm having a good time. I don't want to stop at all.
That could be your theme song, too.
Uh-huh.
That's been our Donald Trump's theme song.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what we've been using it for.
Perfect.
Because it just seems to be situationally appropriate.
You know,
so
that...
apparently we have Roberta as a hostage on hold. I didn't realize she was a hostage on hold. So maybe you don't count as a hostage if I didn't actually know we had you on hold.
Well, I'll tell you, if Bill's stories weren't so good, I might have minded. But I tell you, Bill, you're great. I thought maybe I could compete with you in some of them, but I don't think I can after hearing the last few. Anyway, I grew up on Freebridge Street, which is at the end of Park Marina Drive, between the river and the ACID Canal, which was always full and very cold, but we swam in it anyway at our parents' horror. But anyway, old Freebridge was still there, we used to catch pigeons way up high. It was one of those that had the high girders and everything. And so we'd climb up those and catch pigeons. But then after they put the Cypress Street Bridge in, then we walked the I-beams under the bridge across the river and back again.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. If my kids did that, I would absolutely
Isn't that funny, too? Because you think of the things you did when you were a kid, and it's like, I'm surprised we're alive.
I know. And but I wanted to caution people about that river. They don't realize.
Oh, yeah.
Not only is it so cold that you can't survive too long in it, and it's rapid, too, but... all the brush along the shoreline pulls out. If you try to get yourself out of the river, it's hard to find a place that you can get out.
Sure, sure. No, that Sacramento River is nothing to mess with unless you're a seventh grader on a horse, and then you can conquer anything.
Right.
And then, of course, it'll be just like the movies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
That's John Wayne, that thing, right to death.
Oh, yeah.
Not a problem.
Well, we camped out, took the boys on a canoe trip on the Delta.
God, is this the one Kevin still has bad dreams about?
He does bad dreams about
that. Covered with slugs.
Thanks, Roberta, for the story.
Roberta, you're the best. And, you know, okay, I'm cutting off the slug story for a second because, Roberta, there's one that kind of reminds me of the one you just said. We had a guy we knew. He was a pretty old guy. 20 years ago, so I don't know what year this was, but they lived in Kansas City, and they lived by the rail yard, and he and his buddies used to take pieces of plywood, like flexible plywood, thin plywood, and they used to sit on it at the top of the hill, and they'd slide down the hill while the trains were going through the switchyard, and they'd go between the wheels. They'd, like, shoot kidding. Between the wheels.
Whoa.
On these pieces of plywood.
Word.
Yeah,
oh.
that's the story you want to hear about your kid.
Later.
Yeah.
You know, guess what we did when we were kids, Mom?
One little thing I want to mention, and that is my grandson is going to the Youth America Foundation seminar this week. It's a three-day seminar for high school seniors in his leadership training. And I'm just so proud of him. For taking that challenge on, and they can't wait for him to get back and hear what he heard.
Yeah, boy,
that's exciting.
Good for him.
Well, thanks,
then
Roberta.
Then he can grow up and be somebody's dad and give him stories they can tell later.
Yeah.
That's right. And happy Father's Day to everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks a million. Have a good day.
You know, that last song we went out on reminded me when I was, I think, graduating seventh, going to be an eighth grader. My grandfather told me, he says, we're going to go on a fishing trip, just you and me. Mm. And so he had a place up around La Porte, and they had a cabin up there. And so just him and I went up, and for a week, all we did was guy stuff. We fished. He taught me how to cut willow branches and fish the little streams for brook trout. And then we'd come back and cook them. And his big story of that trip was we camped in the cabin for a week and ate trout and fried potatoes for a week. It was heaven to him.
Yeah.
That was but I'll never forget that. He taught me a lot just in that 1 week on how to do different stuff, you know, and it was a great experience.
See, there's stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be anything fancy. You know, a lot of times people plan these big trips and all that, but those aren't the ones you remember. Mm-hmm. You know, you remember the ones with the soaking wet tent at the end, dragging through Sears.
Yeah.
And Jerry the Werewolf and a crappy pizza from the campground.
That same year we were at the Boar, people don't know maybe, where the ocean comes in and the river conflicts with it and it creates a wave.
Oh.
And the wave runs up. Goes backwards in the river. It's
right.
Called the Boar. And so people gather to watch this Boar occur.
It's like a tidal wave coming.
It's like a tidal wave in reverse going upstream rather than going out to the ocean. And so we were waiting. We got there early. We were reading stories.
Yeah, because we were all sitting there looking at a bunch of sand going, God, this is super fun. So
we read, I'm reading a story, some kind of a story. And said, pretty soon we've got all these mothers and fathers and kids around us. We got 25 or 30 people listening. And somebody said, the Boar's coming. And so I stopped, closed the book, and they said, no, you got to finish the story.
No, we can catch the Boar later.
We'll catch the Boar next time. I do remember that, though. You could hear it like the far away, like the water coming.
Yeah.
That was impressive.
Well, those rocks kind of rumbling a whole bit. Yeah,
we did a lot of – did you guys – when you went on your campouts, Bill, did your family tell stories? Did you do the
story? Yeah, we did the campfire thing. Yeah, we'd sit around and tell stories.
No, I mean, like, we
didn't read stories. My dad had stories.
We went through all the books.
Yeah.
We went through all the Hardy Boys books. Yeah. We went through all the Mother West Wind books.
Yeah.
The ad-libbing didn't go so well, though. The ad-lib stories.
My dad was one of those dads that loved telling campfire stories that were scary.
So that's what I was thinking.
Had to go to bed, it was like, can you come to bed with us? Because I'm kind of scared.
Remember that time you were like making up a story? We were sitting in Yellowstone and you're like, and then there was a bear and he's right behind you, Sean. Sean's face turns all white and he get up very slowly and go toward the tent. And Sean was like he'd been levitated. Up he goes and like swoop goes.
Nice.
Ruined him. Get the book.
Traumatized
Much better
him.
With books.
I remember when we were little tiny kids. I mean, I couldn't have been.
It was true.
You remember that?
Yeah, I remember.
I couldn't have been third or fourth grade. And we lived in Canoga Park. And my folks wanted to go to the neighbors next door. They're having a little party. And so they set us up. My dad set this whole thing up. So they had a big couch and a window behind the couch. Well, he made sure the windows were open. And he said, now, you guys stay on this couch. We're going to be right next door. And you watch the movie. And I forget what the movie was. But anyway, so they take off. And after about a half an hour, we're all intense in this movie. And he sneaks back and sneaks over, looks over into the window to see what we're doing, and lets out this big old scream. And I mean, we fell off the couch. We're all crying. He scared the pants off of us. That was great fun for him.
I could totally see your dad doing that.
You guys would be fine alone. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, that's not a big deal.
Yeah,
nothing to worry about.
Yeah. Nobody's going to come through the window after you.
Or anything. Yeah. It's kind of funny, though, like that. There was a lot of tormenting at our house. I was talking to somebody about homes. I guess it was Bridget. I was talking to Bridget, and she said that the reason that they got their house for a pretty cheap price was because they had two bedrooms upstairs and one downstairs. Mm-hmm. And so nobody wanted their kid to sleep downstairs. And I was like, I had to sleep downstairs. Sean and I used to sleep downstairs in Seattle.
Right.
And so we had like this pegboard between our two fake little bedrooms, you know, we had a little pegboard, but it was off the ground, a couple of feet. So if you got out of your bed really quiet, it was a linoleum type floor.
Yeah.
And so if you got out of your bed and you slithered real slow, real quiet, you could get under the pegboard, under his bed, and then just roll out, wait for it, and then jump up and pounce on him.
Nice.
We used to scare the crap out of each other down there. I'm like, all kids should get to sleep in the basement. It was just good, clean fun. And so here in our last minute here of this particular hour, in honor of all the dads who are deployed perhaps and away from their kids who are serving in the military, I thought we would play a song for them.
Perfect.
So thanks a lot, dads everywhere, and thanks a lot, military dads. We'll be right back.
When the wolf growls at the door, hey, I'm solid, hey, I'm steady, hey, I'm true down to the core, and I will always do my duty. The price, I've counted up the cost, I know the sacrifice, oh, and I don't want to die for you, but if dying's asking me, I'll bear that cross with honor, cause freedom don't come free. I'm an American soldier, an American, beside my brothers and my sisters, I will proudly take the between us. He said daddies don't just love their children every now and then. It's a love without end, amen. It's a love without end, amen.
Come back in on a serious note.
Wow,
yeah.
Welcome to the second hour of We the People. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm that guest.
The guest. We have an in-studio guest on Father's Day. Be my dad.
We actually let him come in and defend himself, right?
I'm chained to the wall.
Hey, he was going to be here. It's like, oh, you know what? We should do a radio program. He goes, no, that's not a good idea. I go, what? It's a great idea. What are you talking about? No, it's a bad idea.
And here I am.
And then later he's like, okay, that's kind of a fun idea.
Yeah.
What are we going to talk about? I go, oh, we're going to talk about all sorts of stuff.
So I got a story. When we were little, of course, all these stories are when we were little, because we can't tell the ones when we were older.
Well, we already decided on the break, just to be a full disclosure, we already decided on the break that there were some stories we couldn't tell because it made dads look bad. So that's pretty bad. That was going on in the background.
This one kind of does, but not really. My dad was an avid hunter and fisherman, and he taught us how to fish for everything from sturgeon to catfish. I mean, he loved all kinds of fishing, and we loved to go fishing. And so one day he says, boys, you want to go fishing? And I, yeah, Dad. All right, go out and dig some worms. And when you get those worms dug, put them in the car and put the poles and all the gear in the car, and we'll go. So we went out, and we dug our worms, and we put the tackle boxes in. We had a big pond outside of town that had bass and catfish and perch. And so we knew what to take. At that stage, we were pretty, you know, pretty good about what to throw in the car. So we throw all the poles in and put the tackle boxes in and the worms and everything. We go in, all right, Dad, we're ready. So he gets in the car. And at that time, we had an old Chevy station wagon.
Okay.
And it had, you know, the tailgate in the back, mm-hmm, that had the roll-up window.
Right.
So we're driving down the road. We're not more than about three blocks from the house. And he rolls the back window up. Well, he didn't look, and all the fishing poles were sticking out the back window. So
you hear,
there goes the tips off all the rods. And I could see him. I was sitting in the back seat. I saw him look in the mirror. I go, oh, man, this is going to be bad. He's going to blow. And he didn't say a word. He just turned the car around. We headed back to the house, and everybody was really quiet. And he said, boys, when we get home, take that tackle out of the back, put those poles in the kitchen. We're going to go to the sporting goods store. I'm going to teach you how to put tips back on poles. It's like, okay, and we did. We went and bought new tips for all the poles, and we sat down, and he showed us how to put them on. But I thought, wow, that was pretty good. He could have really gone off on that one.
Yeah.
But he made it a lesson, you know.
Okay, so I've got one that didn't end with a lesson, but it was fun for the kids. Because it's always kind of fun when the dad messes up. Because
he wasn't,
you know,
a mess up.
He wasn't like a mess up. Okay. So five kids, like I said, you know, five kids in 7 years. And so our table in the kitchen, when we lived in Connecticut anyway, was a picnic table.
They were always picnic tables.
So it was an actual picnic table with the slats, you know, the little slats.
Striped colored.
And yes, and it was
multicolored.
Orange and yellow, in case anybody, yeah, 70s. Yeah, we were modern without being modern.
Right.
We lived 50 miles from Woodstock. During Woodstock, never knew what happened, but we did have a yellow and orange picnic table in our kitchen. So we were kind of cool. Somebody would always, so everybody's legs are trapped under there because you're in a bench, you know, you're sitting on a bench, and it seemed like somebody would always tip over their milk, and it would go through the cracks and get all over everybody's legs. So after years of this happening, you know, parents, after a while, dads just get screwed up. They get like a mental illness that's created by their children and all the trauma they get put through. So I'm like was I in college? I was at least a senior in high school. So we were all a lot older, and our table was a picnic table, but it was flat on top. It was a kind of a fancy picnic table now. It wasn't the kind from a park. And so
from a park.
You know what
all
I
right,
mean.
All right, kids, like, grab one corner. We're taking this table home.
Take the table. So it wasn't like that. So it's Thanksgiving. Kind of a big deal. We're going to sit down and have dinner. And my dad lets out, all of a sudden out of nowhere, just like the edict voice, if anybody spills their milk tonight, we're not having dinner. And it was like, where did that come from? Like, nobody spilled their milk in years. So he's getting ready to sit down for dinner. Boom. Milk goes down. Uh-oh. Looks like Dad did that.
It's true.
And it was like, we're gonna, and then I remember Mom laughed, and that was the end of that. And everybody was down. You lost it. That was like,
I know.
That was the day your power went away. I remember it vividly. It was like, oh, he's lost.
He's human.
He lost his grip on it. That was the best, though. Like, wow, did you really say that? That was awesome. I still remember that. Obviously.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest hero stories of my dad was we were at the dinner table. And
dinner table is important.
My mom was on this kick where all kids had to drink a tablespoon of cod liver oil.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we
my
did that.
God.
Oh, that was her? The God. Most horrid stuff. I don't know where she got the idea, but everybody.
You're going to ruin the show.
So yeah, but it gets better. So she knew nobody would.
There's a happy
nobody liked this. So she had this great idea. they made mint-flavored cod liver oil. So that would be easier to eat, right?
Be so much better.
So she breaks out the cod liver oil, and we're all sitting there, and it's like, we don't want it. We don't want it. Nobody would eat it. And she says, now, you're going to drink this. And she looks over at my dad and says, Bill, you tell these kids they have to drink their cod liver oil. And he just looked over the top of his glasses, and he says, Jackie, I wouldn't drink that GD stuff, and I don't expect those kids to either. We were like, yeah, he's my hero.
We're free.
And that was the end of the cod liver oil. We never had to have it again.
Rescued.
We were. He saved us. He saved us.
There's just funny stuff, you know. There's just goofy stuff. I don't think people realize how, you know, the best moments in life, you know, they say are free. But I still remember, I don't remember what trip, though. Maybe you remember. It was some trip, and we had packed, and we had all the stuff in the car, and we were, like, gone. I mean, we were too far to turn around. And I remember I don't know, it was pretty quiet. And driving along, and all of a sudden, you were driving, and you go, kids, did you remember to pack my hiking boots?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I remember that.
Do you remember to pack my hiking boots? And everybody looks at everybody else. It's like, is he kidding? Like, why would we have packed his hiking boots? You got all mad. Like, we barely packed our own stuff. Because it was always like, yeah, that was your MO. Was like, well, should we? Yeah, we should probably start at the.
We did a lot of hiking.
At the beginning, but it was dark out.
Uh-huh.
It was always dark out.
Uh-huh.
And then suddenly your light switch was going on and off, on and off, on and off, on and off. And there was... Yeah, as you ran through the house flipping everyone's lights on and off.
Yeah, yeah, that was the time to get up and get moving.
Have you blocked that out?
Oh, I blocked that out.
You blocked that out?
I don't remember.
That's real. And
to the audience, I don't remember that. Yeah.
Full disclosure, this is real.
Yeah, yeah.
Stories by the younger set.
And it's like, everybody, get on some grubbies, pack a bag. We're going to go on a camping trip. And then, you know.
Yeah, we were headed for Canada.
And we were going somewhere
yeah.
for like a week.
Yeah.
So whatever. It wasn't always
like
a lot
even,
of.
You didn't even know it was coming.
Not really.
That's funny.
And we went through ghost towns and kind of different places like that. They had to be very quiet.
Well, now.
Because the ghosts
well, we went
were
on
there.
The, we went on the. I mean, we did some really cool stuff that I'm sure people would be terrified of now, but the Cascade Highway.
Oh. Yeah.
When they opened the Cascade Highway.
We were there.
Yeah. With yep. our Jeep Wagoneer, our trusty Jeep Wagoneer.
Our Jeep Wagoneer that got us in all kinds of trouble.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To get rid of the Jeep Wagoneer.
It's four-wheel drive. It'll go anywhere.
It'll go anywhere.
We tried.
Yeah, but I remember the, like, big drop-off.
Yeah, big
I mean, it wasn't paved. It was gravel, wasn't it?
In fact, pine needles are not a good thing to drive on.
No.
They tend to make you slip backwards.
A little sliding.
So when you're going up the hill, they tend to let you slip backwards further than you've gone up the hill.
Wow. And going down the hill, you get there so much quicker.
It's hard to drive backwards, though.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to hear the story about the slugs.
Oh, the slugs.
Yeah.
Well, everybody here knows.
We have to take a really quick break, darn it.
Oh, geez, people are going, easy.
These idiots with their slugs. Okay, I've made a note. I'm circling. Okay, I wrote it down, but now I'm circling it.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about.
Strategy.
We're going to talk about the slugs.
Okay.
Yeah, because that is a funny story, and your brother was traumatized by that. He tells it whenever they get off on camping stories.
All you have to do is say camping. And Kevin,
and,
well, actually, you talk canoe. You
talk
say canoe,
slugs.
And Kevin talks about slugs.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. You're listening to We the People. I guess we should tell you how to find us. Let's see. We're at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm going to watch you shine. Going to watch you grow. Going to paint a sign so you'll always know. So long as one and one is two. Ooh. There could never be a father loves his daughter more than I love.
Back in her file and pull out that old memory and think of me and smile and say, just an old worn out Jeep, rusty old floorboards, hot on my feet, a young girl, two hands on the wheel, I can't replace the way it made me feel. And he'd say, turn it left and steer it right, straighten up girl, now you're doing just fine. Just a little valley by the river where we'd ride, but I was high on a mountain when Daddy let me drive.
It's true.
Daddy let me drive.
Is that totally true?
It's true.
Chestnut,
true.
And I'm like, oh, I remember when I was 12.
Something like
and,
that.
And we used to talk about, oh, when I can drive, just going to be so great. But you let me drive once on a, it was one of our trips across country, and we were in like Nebraska or somewhere. We
but
were, in, we were
nowhere.
In the middle of nowhere. It was
yeah.
I mean, you could.
Iowa.
You could see for 20 miles.
Iowa.
And you're like, then everybody was sleeping. It's kind of back to that Chevy Chase vacation deal again, without the Corvette sports car situation. But everybody's like drooling and sacked out in the back, and Dad's like, "You want to drive?
Are you kidding me?
I got to actually sit in the driver's seat and drive.
Oh my gosh, yeah. How old were you?
I don't know, like 14 maybe?
Yeah, 14, 15.
Yeah, yeah. No, I wasn't 15.
Yeah,
I was probably 13, 14.
Yeah.
But all you really had to do was like.
But it was Midwest. They drive earlier there.
Yeah.
There
was
nothing. And there were no cars.
There wasn't.
There were no cars. There was no traffic, no signs, no. Yeah, there was nothing to do except just hold on to the wheel. But oh my gosh, that was like.
Yeah.
I still remember that.
Yeah.
It was a big day.
You know, it's funny. We
No one knows about it.
My dad bought a brand new pickup one time, and he was so proud of that truck. And he came home from work, and the mirror on the driver's side was ripped off. And he's like, "What the heck?" So he goes in the house and he asks my mom, "What happened to the mirror?" "I'm sorry, honey. I got too close to a pole, and I'm not used to the mirror sticking out, and it hit and ripped it off. Well, we'll get it fixed." And he kind of smelled a rat. He didn't say anything, but you know, my mom's a good driver. So the next day he comes home, and we're all sitting around. He comes in the door. Now, he's a cop. He investigates stuff all the time. And he comes in and he goes, first thing out of his mouth, "All right, who wants to tell me what happened to that mirror?" And my mom got this look on her face like, oh, crap, he knows. She goes, "It wasn't her fault. I was teaching her how to drive, and she got too close to the pole and ripped the mirror off."
Yeah, yeah.
It was my sister.
True confession.
He cracked her like an egg, and then he started laughing. Yeah, it was comical. Because we all knew my sister did it, you know. Yeah. But it was like, "Don't you say anything to your dad.
Don't you tell your dad."
Yeah, and then she cracked.
Yeah.
He didn't know. He just had a suspicion. So, all right, let's talk about slugs.
Tell us about
slugs. Yeah. Delta. Everybody knows the Delta near Sacramento.
Sacramento Delta.
Huge body of water. All kinds of islands, all kinds of strange places. We decided we'd take a canoe trip, spend overnight kind of wandering through the Delta, the two boys
sure,
and myself.
Sounds like fun.
Sounds harmless enough.
But it was, but there's no campgrounds out there. So you pull the canoe over towards the end of the day, get your stove out, cook your meal, go to bed, and you lay in the grass next to the river.
Yeah.
There's kind of little berms there. You kind of, you're like
seems
a pillow.
Harmless.
It's very soft and easy. Next morning we wake up, Sean, the older son, looks over at the younger son, and on his face are these silver streaks. Slugs had crossed his face. Kevin goes, absolutely ape. You know, like, what am I gonna, and there's slugs on my face, and there are three marks, one over the forehead, one over the nose, and one over the chin. Like three.
It's like a slug highway.
Sean couldn't believe it. Kevin couldn't get to the water to wash it off fast enough. And Kevin is still thinks about the slugs in the Delta.
Oh yeah, when you hear Kevin tell that story, he woke up and there were slugs all over his body.
He was
traumatized.
If they made a movie out of it, they'd have Don Knotts play him, and it'd be like, it was awful, Andy, just awful.
The famous slug story.
Gosh, and then there was that time we stayed in some place that had, I remember the grass smelled really sweet. It was some kind of, I don't know what kind of grass it was, but it was really smelly. And it was, and we didn't have to sleep in the tent. We could sleep outside because the grass was super, super thick. And so we just got to put our sleeping bags out on the grass, which never happened. And, oh, my gosh, remember the place was covered with locusts in the morning.
Yeah.
Remember?
We woke up
in the morning and you roll up your sleeping bag.
Yeah.
It was filled with potato chips.
Yeah.
You know, all these people camping in trailers and stuff, they have no idea what they're missing.
Oh, camping in
a tent ruining their children.
Is the way to go.
Oh, yeah. That gets you right back to nature.
It is nature.
anything can happen.
Except
we had two stops that had buildings. One was at Grandma's house.
Oh, yeah.
In Olympia, Washington. We got to stay there. And, of course, one of my college buddies showed up that Sean will never forget, named Bob Devine. And he had two terrible girls who liked Sean. Anyway, I'm not going to go into that story. But anyway. And the other part is we got to stay at a building in Disneyland.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Remember we stayed in the hotel?
No.
And you guys crept out. After 7 o'clock, the younger ones went to bed, and you and Sean took off to enjoy the night lights.
Of course we did.
Of the night lights of Disneyland.
Of course we did.
Yeah.
It's like we went on that convention with you in Marco Island.
Yep.
And I think I was in college, and Sean was in high school, and we went out snorkeling, which was harmless enough, and we were not like we were little kids or breaking any rules, but we got out there, and they had – we had never seen things that big, eels and these giant tarpon fish and all that, and – we were biting on our snorkels so hard that the next, like, for the rest of the time, we could hardly open our mouths. Our jaws hurt so bad. We were kind of freaking out there.
Yeah, our camping trips were definitely no frills. I mean, you took what you had and you threw a few provisions in and you just kind of went with it. We took a trip. One time, we were down in Mexico. My parents spent a lot of time down there. I think it's because their money went further. But we're driving.
It was because your dad could talk to the locals.
Yeah, he spoke Spanish, and so he you know he got along fine. None of us could speak Spanish. We didn't know what was going on. So we're driving down the road, and we're out in the middle of nowhere, and I mean out in the middle of nowhere, as far as you can see in either direction, just a straight highway and a set of railroad tracks running next to the road, and we get a flat tire. So we pull over. All right, boys, we're going to change the flat. And I'm like, oh, God, it's hot. Okay. So we start to change the tire, and we look down the railroad tracks, and here comes these three guys. One's got a pick, one's got a shovel, and one's got a big sledgehammer. And I'm thinking, oh, we're all going to die. These guys are going to roll us out here in the middle of the desert. We're never going to be seen again. And so they come walking up, and my dad starts talking to them. And the next thing you know, he's got them changing the tire. So they get the tire all changed, and they're yucking it up. And we're like, God, how's he do that? You know, he gets everybody to do everything. And the next thing is he pulls out a bottle of tequila or something, and they sit down on the side of the road, and they start passing this bottle of tequila back and forth. Now, these guys are at work, and their job, supposedly yeah, their job was to walk the rails. And,
according to them, yeah, they're at work.
I guess they were supposed to pound in the stakes or do whatever they do, and that was they had to cover so much ground. Well, they sat there for, an hour, passing this bottle, telling stories, and then pretty soon they got up, well, we got to go back to work. So my dad had at that point had to ride in the passenger side. My mom drove because he had a little too much to drink, and we pressed on down the road, and I thought, wow, could you do that today?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, probably not.
Probably not. Probably not. But yeah, crazy. Just crazy.
One of the great moments of my dad's life was on St. Patrick's Day. Kelly, the place he worked was the Washington State Liquor Store. He was the chief clerk, etc. And it's it was a place where everybody in Washington, because it was controlled liquor, you had to go there to buy booze. No, you couldn't buy it at the grocery store. So he was kind of famous in town. Everybody knew who my dad was. And across the street was the local chief of police and the fire station for Olympia. And, of course, every St. Patrick's Day, my dad would put on a top hat in his tuxedo, and he would meet the chief of police at the corner or at the center of the street of Capitol Way, and he would be dressed up in orange. My dad had green. He was an orange Irishman, and my dad was a green Irishman, and they would shake hands on St. Patty's Day.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That was fun.
That was
the tradition.
Tradition. Yeah.
That's what that picture is.
That's what it is. Yeah, right. He was meeting the chief of police on St. Patrick's Day, and he was a Northern Ireland to be forgotten. Northern Ireland.
That's fun.
The Orangeman.
Yeah, yeah.
And he came here
when
he was three.
Yeah, now we know it's three.
Yeah, we always thought he was born in New York. Stories of, you know, if you go back in your history, you get to learn all sorts of stuff now in the days where there's a little bit more information. But we were talking earlier today that some of the stories we were all told about our relatives and, you know.
Well, the famous story on the Icelandic side of my background was as I sat as a young lad listening to the stories from the big Icelandic men, The story was that my grandfather, Thorsten Bjørgford, stole his father's fishing boat along with his cousin, and they sailed across the Atlantic to Newfoundland and then trekked into the island to Winnipeg. Lake Winnipeg, and he met his wife and my grandmother.
And he like
married,
walked across Canada.
And then
right?
They walked across Canada to Tacoma, Washington. Yeah, barefoot. All the stories were nonsense. We found the bill of lading, or not the bill of lading, but the transportation invoices.
Bill of lading for people.
From his trip from Iceland to Scotland, Scotland to Britain, Britain to Newfoundland, and a train trip to Nova Scotia from Nova Scotia.
It was a train.
They're as exciting as sailing a stolen boat across the Atlantic.
but you spend tons of time sitting around. I don't know. You know, that some of the younger families do that as much. But, I mean, even when we were kids, you guys probably did it too. It was always great. We get to Grandma's house and, you know, Uncle Carrie and Uncle Bobby and Auntie Karen, and they, you know, they'd all be there. And then everybody started drinking, and the stories got a lot better then.
Yeah, but even those, I didn't know whether they're drinking or not, but the stories would come.
Oh, there was totally drinking because we were fetching the beer.
Yeah.
We were fetching the beer.
Yeah, there was drinking.
And we got the first sip. It was a high point. Definitely a high point. Oh, and on that happy note, we have to take a break. Some parent has intervened and is making us take a break before we go off the edge. Ashley, you can be our parent. It's all right.
An early riser, always on timer, a backbreaker, giver, not a taker, made sure nothing was missing so we could have everything you didn't. A patient teacher, strong, steady leader, firm handshaker, never met a stranger, tough as steel, heart of gold. It took a while, but now I know all the little life lessons, but you never expected. But thank you, a pat on the back, you did what you did, no questions asked. I could never say enough. Through the downs and the ups, you carried the weight so we'd have a good life. Raised us with love so we could fly. Anyone else would call you Superman, but I just call you Dad.
Ladies and gentlemen,
the man song.
He's the man. He's the man.
I don't take no crap from anybody else but you. I wear the pants around here when I finish with your laundry. Because I'm a guy you don't want to fight. When I say jump, you say you're right. I'm the man of this house until you get home.
He's the man.
What I say goes around here, right out the window. And I don't want to hear a lot of whining, so I'll shut up. The sooner you learn who's boss around here, the sooner you can give me my orders, dear. Because I'm head honcho around here, but it's all in my head.
He's the man. He's the man.
And I can have sex any time that you want. Because I'm a man who has needs, but they're not that important. And don't expect any flowers from me, because if I'm not mistaken, you prefer jewelry. I'm the king of my castle when you're not around.
He's the man. He's the man.
And I'll drink and watch sports whenever I want to get in trouble. And I'll come home when I'm good and ready to sleep on the couch. Because a man's got to do what a man's got to do, and I'm going to do what you tell me to, because I'm top dog around here, but I've been neutered.
He's a man. He's a man.
We couldn't let Father's Day slip by without the band song. Hat tip to Rodney Carrington on yet another home run. Oh, my gosh. They played that one on Bob and Tom. That's the laughing in the background is from their radio program.
Yeah.
It's better with the laughing.
Yeah, it is.
Otherwise, it's not right. Oh, my gosh. So what
the other funny story about my father was when my mother decided she was going to marry my dad.
It wasn't his decision.
No, of course not.
On the heels of the Manson.
Mother was Icelandic, and, of course, everybody there was rather large. They're big people. And, of course, the Irish are not necessarily the largest people on the planet. And when she brought my father home to announce to the family that she was going to marry Hugh Ryan, the brother said, Betta, that was her name, Betty, Betta, why you bring this little man home?
A vote of confidence. Oh, jeez. He had his work cut out for him.
Yeah, because they were huge.
They were big, yeah.
They were men.
They just were big guys.
Yeah.
And they called my dad the Bandy Rooster. He said he'd fight at the drop of a hat.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, he did. He was... we're not going into those stories. Sorry, Dad.
We put a picture of him on the website too.
Way back in the early days, my dad bought an old Willys Jeep pickup. Remember those?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, this thing was a pile of junk.
It's right after the war.
Yeah, this thing it was well used. I mean, it had rusted through floorboards, and I mean it needed some work. But he was really proud of this thing. That was going to be his fishing truck. So this one day we go out to go fishing, and we get about halfway there, and this thing gets a flat tire. We're out on this country road. Well, one thing it didn't have was a jack, and we're out in the middle of nowhere. And I'm like, what are we going to do, Dad? He goes, no problem, son. He goes, let me show you how we're going to do this. He goes, you guys go out and go find me some big rocks. We're like, okay. So then we went out, we collected all these big rocks, and he finds this fence post. And so he piles up the rocks, and he makes a lever with the fence post. He levers it up. We stuff some more rocks underneath it, and that's what he used for a jack. And I never forgot that. It's like, wow, you use what you have. I think that was the same trip that he made us eat the fish we caught cooked on a hot rock. We put a little fire and threw rocks in there, and then he flayed them out and laid the little pieces of on the hot rock, and go ahead and eat it. It's good. It's like, I don't think that's good, Dad. It's got dirt on it. But no, he had a lot of good life lessons there. Oh. Yeah, that was fun.
Dads are for teaching lessons. Yes. Yep.
Exactly.
Yep. The lessons was hard work will always get you to the end.
Yep. Yep.
And but, you can't stop till it's finished.
Yeah.
Never leave anything uncompleted.
Yeah,
and that's pretty important in life today.
Oh yeah,
you know,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, it taught us responsibility and you know, right and wrong and all that stuff. And you know, the funny thing is, you don't know if you did a good job until they're on their own.
That's right.
And you see the end product.
Right.
You know.
Well, the other part of dads are the fun part. There's that. I call my father an Irish leprechaun. He was always kind of mischievous.
Mm-hmm.
Mom was the solid one. She made sure that things, kind of like that song we just heard.
Yeah,
you know, it was solid, got things done. And Dad was kind of like the leprechaun. There was always a twinkle in his eye.
Yeah,
about I think there's a little something interesting over the next hill.
But it's funny, like when we were kids, and we'd show up. I mean, those poor people. God loves them. You know, we'd roll in. And here would come the van, and five little kids would come pouring out, you know.
Well, Dad, you remember the gift he gave you? The Bandy Roosters?
Yeah.
Well,
got eaten by dogs.
Here we are in a city.
The dogs ate them. It was a great
no,
gift.
No, the raccoons ate them.
No, eaten by dogs, I remember, because I was taking mine for show and tell. Its name was Brownie. And during breakfast, I watched a dog run by with it in its mouth out the back window. And there went my
there
show and tell.
That's a valuable life lesson right there.
That's my slug story.
The other part is tree houses.
Yeah.
You gotta have
tree houses.
Gotta learn.
I look back on that, you know. We had that massive treehouse in the back that was like
big.
I mean,
yeah,
that was, and it was really well built.
It was four trees.
Yeah, it was giant. And then the ones that we built in the lot across the street, the like the one Sean had. It was on like a 45 degree angle. You had to lay on it and hold your, like, hold one side. But you could still
floor use, was a little
jacked but you
up.
Could use the tin can telephone to call over to the other treehouse. So his wasn't good. You couldn't sit there or anything. You had to just like hang on it on the side. But I thought about that not that long ago, actually. And I thought, I wonder who owned that property. It wasn't ours. We just went over there with wood and nails and stuff and like built tree houses. And you probably don't even know this one. There were these the kids that lived down the street. I have no idea who they were. I mean, they were kids who lived in our neighborhood in Seattle.
Yeah, your friends, yeah.
No, they weren't our friends. They were old kids. They were big kids. They were probably fifth graders.
Oh, okay.
You know, I was like, what, first grade?
Yeah,
Sean was like...
You were bankrupt.
Yeah, Sean was probably a... No, we lived in Bothell.
Oh, in Bothell.
Yeah,
okay.
Back in Bothell. Yeah. And so Sean was probably... He would have been like a preschooler now. So he's like four. I'm like six. So these kids would come down the street. Okay, so how do you scam little Irish Catholic kids, huh? You're gonna roll a scam on some little kids. They're like, hey, did you know there's a leprechaun house in the woods next to your house? We were like, what? There is a leprechaun house out there in the woods. And Sean and I are like, really? They go, yeah, they really like Lucky Charms. And like, they had kind of a list of the things they preferred. And so we tear back in the house. You know, we had our mom put all the stuff in the baggies, you know, so we had our little baggies of snacks. And we'd go out there and they had a box. It was a cardboard box with some furniture made out of foil. And that was where the leprechauns lived, was in the house. And so you had to leave the food in the house and then go, because obviously they wouldn't come. They wouldn't come when you were there.
Irish snipe hunting.
Like, how many snacks did we get scammed out of because the kids down the street convinced us there was a leprechaun out in the woods?
They come back and eat the food.
Yeah. But I kind of laughed. And like, talk about a bygone era. We went with kids we didn't know into the woods with snacks. No one knew we were there.
Yeah.
You can't do that now. And again, I don't know whose woods those were.
Yeah.
No clue whatsoever. But no, we spent a lot of time in the woods. Oh, you know, running around, riding bikes.
Well,
and doing talking all
about
that stuff.
Woods, when we moved back east, of course, we had the Indian guides and we're in a scout troop.
Oh,
so we
that's
joined
right.
the
we
Indian.
We can't leave without the Indian guide stories because that truly is a dad nightmare right there. It was only dads and boys.
Right. So dads and boys. And it was a 3-block long street and a lot of Irish dads and their kids. And so they said, you're out west. You've got to teach us a little bit about it. So I said the Appalachian Trail was close by. Let's go to the Appalachian Trail and I'll show you where to go. So we pack up the sons and out to the woods we go. And we started hiking and one of the fathers stopped me, kind of pulled me back from the group. And he said, do you know where we're going? And I said, well, sure.
He didn't know you very well, did he? Yeah. He's like, are you kidding me? This guy drives down every dirt road until you're totally lost. But somehow you got
I really
out of it.
Didn't know where we were going, yeah, but it was a trail. It was, you know, the normal-looking trail. People have been on
it
before.
Of course.
You just turn around and walk backwards. You go home the other it's no big deal. Well, he said he's a city-fied kid. You know, the biggest thing he'd been to was an ice rink or maybe an ice skating.
Oh, ice skating.
Pond.
That was
on
his outdoor experience.
Right.
Yeah.
So he said, if we die out here, I'm going to kill you. He said, I've never been this far into a woods in my whole life.
Now, how far in were you? Like
quarter of a mile.
Quarter mile off the road.
He's terrified.
We were already lost.
But you guys used to go to Colebrook.
Oh, yeah.
Camp Colebrook. And that was where they took us there for school, too.
Right.
But that was the Indian guides camp. And you guys were at, okay, God, I wish I had pictures of it. Dang it. The parade. There got to be... It's too bad it was before social media. The big Indian headdress. You would be burned at the stake now.
I would be.
Yeah, cultural appropriation.
Well, we gathered the children, and they made me a headdress. You know, the long cloth, et cetera.
I mean, not the crummy
everybody,
guy.
Everybody put arrows in it. I mean, not arrows. Feathers. So this went clear to my butt.
Yeah.
You know, off my head.
Wow.
It was always a majestic.
And they marched
thing.
Through town.
They marched through town. We had
oh,
a
boy.
In the parade.
Yeah. You certainly can't do that anymore.
And Kevin was right there in front. Sean, of course, they had their
and you guys did,
loincloths. They
but
did.
You guys made like totem poles out of, was it milk jugs?
Yeah. It was
styrofoam blocks.
Right,
yeah, everybody
carpet.
Had to decorate their
right.
thing. And then they made these big totem poles and they carried their totem pole through the thing. And
Oh, that
now
was
we better
big...
take a really. Oh man, we're almost out of time. What the heck? Are you kidding me?
But Sean wearing a loincloth. Can you imagine?
Oh gosh,
you know, underwear underneath, of course.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But it was.
Sorry, Sean.
Sorry,
Sean. We didn't run out of time fast enough.
Did you save that loincloth, Sean? I got to see it. Does it still fit?
Sean turned out to be a great dad, so you know. Yeah. Apparently, you do a little
Welcome
time in the loincloth, you'll be all right.
All right.
You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, if you're not totally frightened.
Is this it?
I realize that he was here with me. I look into my father's eyes. My father's eyes. I look into my father's eyes. My father's eyes. My father's eyes.
1957, helping that Lutheran church. Leaves a man should work all week, save Sunday for the Lord. They don't make them like that anymore. Standing shoulder to shoulder with him now, I still feel small, I'm still looking up to him like he's 10 feet tall. Something about that generation. Like that anymore.
Probably a whole lot of people here on Father's Day thinking,
hey, that happened to me.
That happened to me.
That reminds
me. And they don't make them like that anymore.
Yeah.
And a lot
yeah.
of great dads out there. And, you know, it's really kind of it's a real disservice in our society these days. You know, men are so marginalized and
testosterone.
Yes, masculinity is bad, and you know, taking your kids on campouts is weird, and making them walk long distances and get slugs on their face, and you know, do paper routes that are miles from their house and shovel snow.
We forgot that story.
Yeah, we did forget that. Although there were
the world of contracts.
We only moved to Connecticut so we could shovel other people's snow cheap.
Yeah, blisters on your hands, so, building fence.
Yep. I mean, you know, all that stuff,
yeah.
right? And
yeah.
and you grow up and you do work, but you know, we did things that were different. Like when we rolled into Connecticut, it was like, okay, go meet all the neighbors because that's what
right.
you did. And
first
all,
thing,
of course, thought we were weird. And then
you're from where?
Had like yeah, you're from Washington.
Where is that?
Where exactly is that? And then you had the the caroling parties like
That's
at Christmas
right.
time, you know, you had the big
caroling parties. The barrel would be filled full of heat. One of the fathers took a 50-gallon drum and then burned wood in it all day till it was just massive coals. He built a special wheel platform so as we drug it down the street in the snow, we could sing carols to all of the neighbors
and have a nice little.
And we were in a Jewish,
Catholic. You were either Jewish or Catholic. Those are the only teams.
The only teams on the block. So finally, we got to know the Jewish gentleman across the street named Stanley Kinnear through the Boy Scouts and the Indian guys.
He came over and said, like a nice
"Enough of this nonsense, Ryan."
Canoes.
He says, "You Catholics are doing all the good stuff." He said, "Next year we want to join you." Because we had a big glog party in the basement after the walking the street and singing the carol.
Because we were freezing. Yeah.
The kids would go down. We'd sit upstairs and drink glog, ski glog, you know, at the time. That was the in thing.
Yeah.
And so Stanley, next year, he would help all his Jewish guys come. And we'd sing it Hanukkah songs at the Jewish house, carols at the Catholic houses. Because you had to be one or the other down the street.
Yeah,
that's all there was.
That's fun.
Yeah. But
you don't see that anymore.
No, but you talk about love and neighborhood and enjoyment.
You were the great organizer.
Oh.
You were always the great organizer. Yeah. Let's have a block party. People are like, what's a block party?
Yeah, well, let me show you.
We get you lined out, obviously. You must be new at this. Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
It was fun. When
yeah.
we left, I'm sure they were like, oh, Ryan's left. Now there's nothing to do. Back to what we were doing before. Nothing.
When I was... gosh, how old was I? Wasn't very big, maybe fifth grade or so.
I had a little accident on my bike that required a bunch of stitches.
Is that when you flew on the fence post after you slipped off that fig?
Yeah. So I just stabbed myself on a fence post. And
actually, it was a T-post. Right in the heart.
Yeah, it was bad. So anyway, go to the hospital, get stitches. No big deal. Well, we were planning a camping trip like a week later or whatever it was. And so we take off on this camping trip. You know, we did a lot of camping as kids, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
And so we're up.
That's why I had to marry you. We actually knew what the other person was talking about.
Yeah.
It's true.
So, I
think we were up in Oregon. We were up on the coast someplace, and we were staying on the beach and in a campground. And so I think we're staying in a cabin, as a matter of fact.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was a big deal. So
$5.
In the morning, we had breakfast, and then my mom says, come on, kids. We're going to go down to the beach, and Bill and your dad are going to stay here for a few minutes. And I'm thinking, uh-oh. Am I in trouble?
Bill's getting clobbered.
Like, what's going on with this? And so I look over at my dad. I go, why do I have to stay? He goes, come on over here, son. He goes, we're going to talk.
Uh-oh.
The dad talk. I'm fifth grade for crying out loud. What's a dad talk? So they all leave, and I go over to the table, and there's a little pair of scissors and a pair of tweezers laying there. And he goes, son, I'm going to take those stitches out for you. And I'm like, oh, no way, man. You need to be a doctor to do that.
But didn't the guy who sewed you up, wasn't he drunk?
Yeah, he was drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Turned out at the hospital, yeah, his dad smelled booze on his breath and almost killed the guy.
Yeah, that was a whole other story.
That's how the stitches got in. It's a drunk doctor.
Yeah, so I sit down. I'm like, no, Dad, we got to go to the hospital for that. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, you know, I need to be on a table with masks and, you know, gurneys. And
knocked out, preferably.
Probably knocked out. And he says, no, he says, it'll be easy. He goes, you won't feel a thing. And I'm like, oh, there's scissors involved. I'm afraid of this. And so he very tenderly cut the stitches. And then one at a time, got to hold them with the tweezers and ding, pulled them out. And it was like, oh, kind of just pinched, pinchy feeling, you know. And he went right down the line, pulled all those stitches out. And I thought, man, he's like a doctor in Mexico. I mean,
that's probably why I went there all the time.
I know. He knew how to do everything. It's like, wow, I was really impressed. And afterwards, it was like, geez, it feels a lot better. I don't have those itchy stitches in there anymore. But yeah, he knew how to do that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. My dad's medical ability. I was immediately struck with how we had our teeth extricated. Mm-hmm.
Was it the doorknob?
Mm-mm.
Oh.
No. You had a loose tooth. It was, you had to like leave your mouth hanging open for a while until the tooth got dry. And you had to come with bring some toilet paper that, you know, you folded into like four, maybe a little, you had like a little square of toilet paper there. And then that got in there. You know, this was a kind of a situation. You know, you
procedure.
Had it, you had it like, you know, around the tooth to make sure it was nice and dry and all that. And then right before he ripped it out of your head, he stepped as hard as he could right on the instep of your foot.
Ow!
And just crushed it. I'm surprised we actually didn't wind up with broken bones. Crushed the instep of your foot, ripped the tooth out of your mouth, and honestly, it was a tie as to what hurt more. And as you got older, you started to notice there was a pattern forming.
Caveat to the audience. Yeah. I don't remember all of this.
Oh, you're going to block that out too? Yeah, okay. I have four siblings that are going, totally happened. But as you got older, you're like, hey, look, you don't have to do the foot thing anymore, really. I'm old enough. Just pull the thing out. Yeah. Don't step on my foot. But I think he liked it because he did it every time.
Get your foot over here. We're going to pull your tooth. What?
So bottom line is Dr. Bill beats Dr. Ken.
Yeah, that's not
exactly
bedside manner right
the guy
there.
You wouldn't want Bill's mom doing it because Bill's mom's favorite saying was, it's a long way from your heart.
Oh, come over here. It's a long way from your heart.
She wasn't really all that compassionate.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I remember. Hey, you had to pull Mountain Ashberry out of Sean's nose.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had to go to the emergency room the first time, and it was like you had to get called and come home from work when we lived in Spokane.
Yep.
Sean
sniffed it up.
Yeah, he was going to blow it at somebody. Instead, he sniffed and got it stuck in there. And then the next time my mom calls him at work, Ken Sean's got a berry stuck in his nose. He's like, don't take him anywhere. I'll be right there. And I remember that.
Would you do the Heimlich?
No, they stretched him out on the kitchen table. Give me the tweezers. And they just rammed him up his nose and pulled the berry out. Yeah. It's the end of that.
Not the hell with that.
Well, no, we're not paying
money.
For that.
Oh, yeah.
Hell, yeah. You know,
that's
show
expensive.
Me one. I can do it after that. I mean, he didn't stuff him up there anymore.
Hey, we could have done a whole show just on the medical stuff.
Oh, we
I kind of forgot about that stuff.
I know.
There's some good material there. But you know what? At the end of the day, there was a lot of fun. Oh. Everybody got through it. Everybody grew up to raise their own kids. They're all fine.
Yep.
What more is there?
There isn't any more.
I mean, that's what dads do.
Learn to love, learn to care, learn to work.
Yep.
And the Almighty kept them in his grasp.
Yeah,
and your end product is the fruits of your labor.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had five kids. Bill's family had four kids, and Ashley's going to start our final song for us.
Yeah, we all grew up and survived and turned out pretty good.
She's waving at me. I'm not looking. I was looking at something else. I was looking at this little quote we had on the website for dads, but it's going to be too late by the time I find it. So anyway, happy Father's Day, everybody. Thanks, Dad, for being with us. We really appreciate it.
I've enjoyed today. Thank you very much, dear.
I'm glad you came
Thanks,
on.
Bill.
It was fun.
It was
fun.
Good.
Sometimes I thought he was being just a little bit hard on me. But now I understand he was making me become the man he knew that I could be. In everything he ever did, he always did with love. And I'm proud today to say I'm his son. When somebody says, I hope I get to meet your dad, I just smile and say, you already have. The older I get, the more I can see how much he loved my mother and my brother. That it could, and I only hope when I have my own family. But every day I see a little more of my father in me. He's in my eyes, my heart, my soul, my hands, my pride. And when I feel alone and I think I can't go on, I hear him saying, son, you've been.